Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Revolution Radio. We are very excited tonight to have Reverend James D. Manning joining us. He'll be here in about 5 minutes, along with a number of other people to join us. And this evening, we're going to be talking about the Columbia CIA trial and a number of other things. I've just posted in the chat room a note from the tea room on a false flag event that I'd like you to take a look at, because we will be talking about that post tonight. Alex Jones has suggested that there's going to be a false flag event somewhere in the Southwest or the West, coincidental with Homeland Security and high-level military activities at that time in the same area. There is also a suggestion that there are a number of diversions away from the Manning trial, and this may be one of them. Dr. Manning this evening will also be talking about some new revelations that the government and Columbia University have admitted to, like exactly where Obama was at the time he was supposed to be at Columbia, as if to try to put off certain kinds of information, as to try to put off the truth about what's going on. So in the meantime, we have a number of guests this evening, already 16 users in the chat room. Good evening, everyone. Welcome, guests. I'd like to also welcome our military, active, and retired, and all those fighting for freedom for our country. And if any of our callers do want to speak right now, we've got someone on the line. If you want to speak, raise your hand. If it's Pastor Manning, we'll be looking forward to you there. But the other thing I wanted to report on that seems to be brewing is increased attention to Obama's lack of eligibility. We all know that Michelle Obama's tape came out where she called Kenya Obama's home country. And interestingly enough, candidate Obama had that same tape on his website, but that portion of Michelle Obama's speech had been scrubbed. So, of course, it's all coming to light right now in terms of what is actually happening. also, the Kenyan government, of course, the Minister of Land, I believe, was talking about America and about exclusion. And essentially said, how could a man who was born in Kenya ever come to be president of the United States if the United States had not gotten rid of, quote, exclusion? Well, two things. He admitted Obama is a Kenyan. But the second aspect of that is we did not, the United States did not get rid of exclusion with regard to the qualifications of the commander-in-chief. So that is a very important issue to take note of. And again, we have other speakers, other callers in there. If you are a speaker this evening, please press 1 so we know who you are. And in the meantime, I'll ask Mama Cooks to find out who they are, please. Hang on. There we go. Okay. All right. So this eligibility issue is coming up. It is actually fundamental. You know, I've been thinking about this. The Republicans, I know there are a few people who are really standing up, which is very good. Yes, that's right, Mountain Goat. The Kenyan minister said that Obama was not a Native American. He is a Native born citizen of Kenya, not of America. So this is very important. The other information is coming up. In short, there's a flood of information that's coming up now that that really is too much to stop our inquiry. The Kirchner case is moving up. There is just a lot of information out there. We all knew this, but now there's a leak. Now, what could that be about? When you think this has happened before, remember what had happened before when this stuff has come out. Thank you, Mountain Goat, for putting that information in there. When you think about what is coming out, you also think about what's happened before, and what has happened before is that there has been another event or some kind of diversion. Cap and trade is up and back. There are going to be huge new taxes, gasoline taxes and cap and trade. I've just done some traveling in the last few days, and gas is up about 20 cents a gallon at least. So that is a problem. Then this potential false flag event, I'm going to put this in the chat again for your review, that this would be another diversion to take away from the information that's coming up. Why is this so important right now? The Republicans have been very strong. They've been looking at this information, well, not the information on natural born citizen, but they've been doing all the usual things, you know, accusing Democrats of being tax and spend liberals. Some have gone so far as to say this socialism and tell the truth there. But they've turned a collective blind eye to the one thing that could turn this entire mess around, and that is to basically disqualify Obama because he's not eligible. They've ignored the issue that it's not the birth certificate. How can they ignore now this information from the Minister of Lands in Kenya? How can they ignore Michelle Obama's tape? How can they ignore the pressure that's going on and the fact that 50% of the American population, according to a recent poll, do want this information to come out? You know, how can they ignore that? Well, they can through a false flag event. I'm going to, let me see, our caller should be calling in pretty soon now, so we'll go from there. So I ask you to take a look at, there he is, 212. I ask you to take a look at these broader events as we welcome Reverend Manning this evening. And here he is. Reverend Manning, good evening. This is Dr. Kate.
Dr. Kate, how are you? Good evening. Good to speak with you.
Good to speak with you, too. I welcome you with great honor and thanks for your coming and gratitude for your service to our country and the work you are doing. And I offer you prayers for your tremendous success. And again, just want to give you a hearty welcome to Revolution Radio. This is the first time you've been on our show, and I'm delighted.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I certainly appreciate all of the things that you have said. And we have a great country, we have a great nation, and it's great because of so many wonderful things that have gone into it, but mainly our foundation, which is the Constitution, and God's blessing upon this nation, and we shouldn't throw it away. And I think everybody should be excited about preserving this nation. And I want to do just that. I don't want to see us destroyed. So I've just been kind of working very hard to say that to everybody.
Thank you very much. Now, Reverend Manning, your time I know is limited, but I want to offer you the broadest possible platform. I put a post up on my blog today and requested some questions and some my readers have come forth, and I know there'll be questions coming from the chat as well. But generally, in whatever way you'd like to talk about these things, I have three issues on my mind. First, of course, is the Columbia CIA Obama trial, sedition and treason, and the status on that, how we can help you, because there are a lot of listeners tonight. And also, some of the things that you are learning and what is coming out, some of the interesting information. I saw a couple of your clips there. That's the first thing. The second is, with respect to the CIA trial, this issue of a potential false flag event or any kind of events that you feel are designed to distract the very important information in your trial. And lastly, I don't know if you saw them, but there were some extraordinary pictures of the volcano in Iceland. And some of my readers wanted to ask you if you were looking at some of the signs of judgment that God may be offering us, signs of the times that require us to stand up with God and stand up for the Constitution. So in those three broad ways, go for it, please.
Well, I will try to respond to those three, and but please interrupt me if I tend to go long on any one particular item or if there needs to be some clarity that I may have overlooked in trying to make my presentation. Just simply to start with the issue, number one, the status of the trial. We have called this trial for several reasons. One is that I have been very much and acutely aware of Obama from a spiritual point of view. Long before he won the primary, even the Iowa caucus, I was very much aware of him and being very sensitive to spiritual, to the prophecies of Jesus, and to where we are as a people, and specifically the scriptures in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 24, verse 4. And the other item is that our world, our planet, has just really reached a point where we are now a global people, which would afford and appreciate the time of a global leader, a one world leader, if you will, a beast who can rule all planets, I mean all nations rather. We were not there 20 years ago, but we are most assuredly there now. And since growing up in the church, I've always heard about that. I now believe I'm living through the prophecies that was preached by preachers years ago. But the other thing is that God has blessed this nation, and no matter what one says about this nation, it is indeed a blessed nation. And I've learned that the hard way, the blessed way, and I think the only way all of us should learn it. But the other item is that this trial needs to take place on a less important reason, but certainly a very important reason, is because everyone who's made a petition to the courts to raise the question about Obama's eligibility that has been quite secretive, and none of us really know for a surety where he was born or when, in a real sense, the courts have unanimously and consistently and relentlessly denied all American citizens, one and all, and in every court, they have denied us due process whereby we might be able to have all papers and documents laid on the table and a fair judgment made so we just don't have to take the word of an organization that says this or that or the other because of their own favorability or their own biasness. So we have called for this trial. The thing that makes this trial different and why it is critical and important is that God spoke to me and said that, and when I say God spoke to me, I mean he's helped me to understand. I don't mean we were having a, you know, one-on-one conversation in that way, but God has helped me to understand that as he spoke to the church in the book of Revelation chapter 3, verse 8, that I've set before you an open door. And though Obama has paid over $1 million to seal his records and then with an executive order to further seal them so that nothing that he has done that we need to verify can be examined, Columbia University is an area that he cannot seal. Now, of course, his grades there, his financial aid in Columbia, what he did can be sealed. But whether he was there or not, whether students interacted with him or not, what students would have to say, what professors would have to say, how he responded to the environs of Columbia University, et cetera, all of that is an open door, and it's clearly open to be examined. And we have seized upon that in a spiritual way, and we became aware of the fact that he did not attend Columbia under the traditional or non-traditional standards and procedures of issuing a degree from Columbia University, although they did give him one. But we became aware of the fact that he was not a traditional student, nor was he involved in any of Columbia's foreign affiliations, as one might say, or in his general programs. He just wasn't there. And the first person that I heard make that statement was back in 2008 during the height of the primary where George Stephanopoulos, who graduated from Columbia University with a bachelor's degree in political science as well, he graduated a year prior to Obama, but he stated that he was there for 4 years. He never saw Obama. He doesn't know anybody who knows Obama and any of the classmates he has talked to. The 25 years he's been out of there, no one ever mentioned about an Obama. And with a name like Obama and a person who's as striking as Obama is, Stephanopoulos would have known him because they would have been in the same political class, the same program of political science. While there are many students there at Columbia, you kind of come across and a tall, striking black man such as Obama would have been readily recognized. But he's not the only one. Fox News once heard what George Stephanopoulos said. At the time, Fox was pursuing Obama to destroy him, and they sent a crew up to Columbia to investigate, and their final report that was broadcast on Fox News and the conduct and character of Obama, and later written in the Wall Street Journal, that Fox, Rupert Murdoch owns that publication as well, and both of them testified that of the 400 people that were interviewed at Columbia in 2008, not one of them remembers the name Obama, not one of them remembers ever seeing him in a class at Columbia, not one of them ever had any interaction with him. And so it became apparent during that investigation that there was something amiss. I've gone ahead and done a full investigation, and Dr. Cate, I can tell you, he was not there. Now, we acknowledge that Columbia gave him a diploma, political science degree. It was not with a regular listing of students. It was sort of off to the side. But they gave him one, but he was not there as a student at Columbia University. We can verify that with a slam dunk amount of evidence.
Something he never expected, Reverend Manning.
I would think so, Dr. Kay. Mm-hmm. He just never thought it would come to this. And when the other news agencies raised it, for whatever reasons, he was able to quash it and quiet it down. But, you know, there's one other thing that Columbia University is in Harlem. A lot of people don't know that. It's in a sort of selected, gated part of Harlem, if you can think about Harlem in that regard, but it really is. And it's only 7 blocks from where our church is located. But it's in Harlem. You walk out of Columbia, you walk out onto Broadway, Amsterdam Avenue, and you are in Harlem. The smells, the sounds, the culture, it's all over the place. Were Obama a student in Harlem for 2 years, somebody in Harlem would have recognized him during the campaign, during the winning of the nomination. There's nobody in this community that ever remembers him either. I've been here for 28 years. I went to school right across the street from Columbia at Union Theological Seminary, got my master's degree there the same year that Obama was getting his bachelor's. I don't remember him. He just wasn't there. But he never thought that this would. God has opened this door, and we're going to walk through it.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So, both Fox News and Stephanopoulos just shut up after that information came out. What happened after there and when you start inquiring?
I am troubled by the fact that Stephanopoulos and Fox News and the Wall Street Journal, that they know this. I would think they would have a duty to the people of America to inform them that there may be a breach of our trust in this individual and that it should be examined, and that would be something that they would do to represent both sides. The other thing I think is clear to Dr. Cate about this matter is that Obama left Occidental College in 1981 and matriculated at Columbia. Now, Columbia is a very difficult school to get into. Everybody knows that. The fifth most difficult school in America to get into. He had a C average at Occidental, but yet matriculated to Columbia, where at the very least a 3.5 average, grade point average, is required just to get your application submitted. And then you got have a whole lot of other things going for you before they allow you into Columbia, because tens of thousands of students apply every year with that grade point average. He was a C student. He was allowed in. The other item is that I believe that one of the things that has impeded Columbia and reason why Stephanopoulos and others, in fact, have failed to come forward is because when he was accepted at Columbia under the guise of what they were doing, which was to be a CIA operative, that they just never thought would ever be a matter of contention, that he also was not a natural born, or he was a foreign student. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, now that he has won the presidency, if you will, all of that now becomes a violation of federal laws, election laws, fundraising laws. It is just a mess of violations that they are now complicit in, that it just kind of snowballed onto my thinking.
Reverend Manning, I'd like to take an opportunity to welcome Helen. I think she's on the line. Is that correct?
Helen, are you there? I know she said she would be on the line tonight, and I'm expecting her to chime in at some point. I pray that she is on the line.
I think she has a live mic, but she may have muted herself.
Well, Helen has come along, Dr. Kate, and she's been following this matter for some time, and she's come along to offer her skills and her expertise into in helping us to organize this. This is a massive undertaking. I had no idea what it was like, because what we want to do, Dr. K, it is my sincere desire to conduct this trial in the most judicious way, that it meets all norms and standards and practices of any court proceeding, that the last thing that we would want, and it would certainly negate any accomplishments that we would have if we conducted this trial in a way that was biased or it smacked of a kangaroo court, or if we failed to adhere to the rules of court jurisprudence. We want to make sure that we dot every I and we cross every T. Mm-hmm. So that within itself is a major undertaking. And then organizing for it, going over the legal, meeting with lawyers and making preparations and expecting people to come to this community is a massive job. Well, we've got a real jewel now because Helen has come along to put everything in place for us. And so we're really thankful to have her support.
Well, that is a lovely thing to say, Dr. Manning. Thank you.
Welcome, Helen from the tea room. Again, welcome both of you again. Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you. What I guess I want to let the listeners know is just a little bit. They don't really know who I am, and that's perfectly fine, quite frankly, because I was anonymous for 2 years. I went by the handle of D2I, but I've got a resume full of lobbying experience, special event experience, nonprofit experience, so on and so forth. So when I was watching Dr. Manning pull this huge undertaking together, I thought, you know what, I need to reach out to Dr. Manning and say, hey, here's my resume. If there's anything I can do to help you, I want to be able to do that. And it's pro bono. I just want to help you because I want you to succeed. What you're doing is for this country. It's for the health and the wellness of our country. So therefore, my skill set is your skill set. Just use me any way you want. And the reason I say that is because all of you guys that are listening right now also have a skill set. And in order for us to really pull this off and to do exactly what Dr. Manning stated, crossing all the dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, it is going to take, I don't want to sound silly, but it's going to take a village. It's going to take a community. And Dr. Manning is so fortunate. He has a community there in Harlem that have been steadfast and loyal and doing all the what I would call the grunt work, the research, the investigating, the going over into the archives and so on and so forth. So he's already got a stellar volunteer base. But anything we can do to enhance them and help them become successful, I so would encourage you to contact me through the tea room and ask me, how can I help? Because I can plug you in, and we want Dr. Manning and his ministry to be absolutely 100% successful in their endeavor here, because they are doing for us what we have been asking folks to do for us. So he's taking that risk, and his ministry is taking that risk, and his community is taking that risk, and we absolutely need to come out and support them and show them how patriots are and how true blue we are. So that's about all I got to say. So contact me.
Thank you very much, Helen. And Dr. Manning, I met Helen at the 9/12 march in D.C., and I could tell you have a jewel. I've known her over the internet, of course, and writing, and I can't tell you how thrilled I am that you both have hooked up, and you yourself are amazing. And Helen, we were just talking about the trial. We were talking about three things we'd like to talk about tonight, the trial, what things have come up that Dr. Manning suggests or thinks might be false flag operations to divert away from this important trial, because no one's been able to get at this. As he's pointed out, the judges have shut everything down. And then thirdly, some of the larger signs that we see, I think I sent you the photos of the volcano,
right,
and so forth. So with that in mind, Helen and Dr. Manning, please continue.
Well, the false flag issue is certainly one of grave concern for us. As stated, Colombia is indeed an open door. Not only are we going to do a trial, and we estimate that we should be able to complete it within a number of days, but in the process of the trial, seeing that our church is only seven blocks away from Columbia University, we have also called for a seven-day march around the compound of Columbia University, likened to the biblical march of Joshua around the city of Jericho. Mm. And each morning before we actually have the gavel fall in the courtroom, we want to assemble everybody outside of Columbia, march around it, and then come over to the church, and we'll have the proceedings for that day. The following morning, we'll do the exact same thing until the seventh day. We're going to march seven times as Joshua did. And so just undertaking this most marches, I was at the 9/12 march down in Washington back in September as well. I was there. Most marches on Washington is a one-day event. You get back on your bus or your car, you go back home. This event's going to last for 7 days, and we were anticipating a lot of momentum building over the 7 days. It's going to be held in Harlem, and it's a trial about the alleged first black president of America that's going to be held in a respectful way in a church that has fairly much a black congregation and a black pastor. It's going to attract a lot of attention. We want to make sure that we filter that attention the appropriate way, that we channel the energy that will flow from that in the appropriate way. But the other thing is that I was talking with the lieutenant who is arranging for us to have a parade permit to do that for 7 days to block off the streets. And he was complaining to me, well, we've never had anything last quite this long. Usually our parades are one day, or events are one day events, and everybody leave. You're talking about 7 days, he started complaining. We're talking about New York City Police Department now. He started complaining about we don't have the resources, the manpower to see this through for 7 days. Well, he's just trying to get me to kind of slim down everything. I'm not backing down from anything. They'll just have to do it. I'm a citizen, have a right to free speech, and we're going to do it. But it certainly is going to be a unique experience, and we want to represent the finest and the highest caliber. We don't want this to be any kind of a rowdy event or an event of anger or a riotous. We want this to be an event that recognizes the greatness of our nation and the fact that we can do it, and we're going to put a lot of emphasis on that. That takes a lot of time and effort. But I believe that Obama recognizes, well, I'll just say this, we've already got his statements about where he was on why he was so not seen at Columbia. He's already made statements. Columbia's already got their statements out there. They made their statements 2 years ago not thinking that they would be set in stone, and now they can't change them, and it convicts them. It's a really slam-dunk case. But I think that the thing that what they're going to try to do now is to begin to raise false flags. That is to say, the whole matter of the young minister from Kenya making a statement that Obama was born in Kenya last month, Michelle, the fist bump of Obama, making a statement at the lesbian and gay meeting, and now that has been floated, that was made some time ago, that his homeland is Kenya. I suspect that the only credible defense that they have right now is to try to soften the impact of the information that's going to come out of this trial by leaking the information the way Obama leaked the information about his smoking cigarettes. I mean, he just couldn't keep that from the press, so he had Anderson Cooper do a special on it, and he kind of talked about it, how he regrets having done it, and he's working on it. But he wanted to get it out so people would know that he smokes cigarettes. I think he's going to try that. To distract the matter, I'm confident that's what he's going to do, but we're prepared for that as well.
Now, that's very interesting because just the sneaky leaking things out ahead of time. Now, you mentioned that he had made statements as to where he was. Are you at liberty to let us know what statements, how he made them, and whether these recent releases of things are intended, as you say, to soften the blow, which makes sense, but we're not going to let him soften the blow anyway.
There are two statements he made about the time that he would have been at Columbia. Number one, and perhaps the most, I suppose, damaging to him would be during an interview, he made a statement that in 1981 he traveled to Pakistan. Now, there was a travel warning, and we've pulled the records from the State Department for several years on traveling to Pakistan because of the war that was going on in Russia with the Soviet invasion in Afghanistan. He made that statement voluntarily. No one asked him. He did it on his own, that he traveled to Pakistan. That's one statement at a time when he should have been at Columbia. The other thing is that when he was questioned by Newsweek magazine on board a flight traveling from one campaign stop to another, he made the statement that the reason, because he was asked, the George Stephanopoulos, Wayne Allen Root question had come up, so he was asked, he said, well, these people were your fellow classmates, and they don't remember seeing you. So a Newsweek reporter asked him, where were you? And he said, oh, well, during those years, I had become an aesthetic, and I went days without speaking to people. I just wasn't seen by anybody. And that's his answer for why no one remembers him at Columbia. But my thing is this. Obama is about the most narcissistic person I've ever seen in my life. He can hardly walk by a camera without stopping
exactly.
and having something to say. This man loves the limelight. You're going to tell me he expects us to believe that while he was at Columbia, he didn't talk or speak to anyone for years, for days on end? I don't think it's going to fly at all.
Well, also, with respect to the other people trying to soften the blow, you've, I think, also uncovered that Columbia may be running a diploma mill in the sense that didn't they just leak information that Obama was at some school in Russia at the same time?
Yeah, they did. I got an email, several, stating that Columbia is ready to confess now that Obama was at the Patrice Lumumba School, which is a school founded in Moscow, a Marxist school in honor of this young leader of the Congo, who's very young. I don't know why they ever named it after him. But it's the school that has trained a number of Marxist leaders, including Fidel Castro, who came out of the hills of Cuba and kicked Batista out and became the communist leader there. So I got an email stating that Colombia is now acknowledging that Obama was there, and they were in oversight of his education at Patrice Lumumba. And I haven't talked about that very much because what they want me to do is to publicize it. They want me to say it so that people say, okay, all right, well, we understand that's what went on. They didn't realize they had to explain anything, you know. But I don't talk about that. I did make mention of it, but I have the emails. I have it all the records documented. I got it all nailed down. I'm going to use it a different way, I can tell you that now.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And it again, it raises the specter that a door that opens, that Obama was not expecting it to open. We can talk about his satanic influences later, but the Lord opened this door to you. Also has opened up a possible diploma brain. Lots of schools do it, but Columbia University? I wonder what else is going to be forthcoming.
Well, I received some information a few days ago that was not a part of the foundation of our case against Columbia and Obama that opened the possibility. Now, Columbia didn't leak this, but it opened the possibility that Obama, it was not the only one that Columbia has done this for, that foreign money coming in and CIA covert involvement or seeking students out of Columbia, or seeking Columbia's aid in their global management, if you will. The CIA is a very destructive, a very vicious organization that does not take any prisoners, as we all know. And that Columbia has perhaps been involved in international and business selling using their reputation and their prestige before Obama. I haven't fully verified that, so I haven't talked about that very much, but it looks like a real possibility. I may know of other people who's gone through the same kind of process Obama's gone through, which only strengthens our case, by the way.
And there again, now we turn towards the CIA angle, which is, again, Reverend, I want to thank you for your courage to take this on, because Brzezinski is Columbia, or Columbia is Brzezinski.
You got that right.
One word or another. And
you got that right.
I've got a photo of Brzezinski, I know you've seen it, with bin Laden in 1981 in Pakistan. And right around the same time, Obama was there supposedly partridge hunting. Where and how do you see this fitting in? And do you even believe he was at that school? And by the way, we had a question from our audience about a Roman Obama who supposedly went to that Lumumba school. So what do you think about this moving into the CIA angle?
Well, Brzezinski is, as you stated, Colombian, Colombia vice versa, and he was there for a goodly number of years. Brzezinski has had this this fixation on global domination by proxy, and there are a couple of nations that certainly on his roster to destroy. One was Russia, and the other was China. And Columbia University represented a couple of things. One, for him, a great farming ground to pick up students or pick up potential world leaders from other nations and from within the borders of America. He ran the program over there for a large number of years. He's not there anymore. He's with another, I forget, we sent him a subpoena. But he and Obama would have been... One of the things that we pointed out is that Obama was a fun-loving guy. He was really kind of not a very serious guy. Brzezinski is really Obama's mentor, not Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky is a red herring. Now, of course, some of the practices that Saul Alinsky wrote in his book that Obama may have read had long since been demonstrated by Brzezinski and his type. But if you really think about who Brzezinski is and then look again at Obama and look at him prior to his during his Occidental days, Obama has been well-groomed by Brzezinski to be the person he is at present. You made mention of something else. I think I've forgotten what you made mention of about the CIA, I think. Brzezinski being in Pakistan with Obama,
Bin Laden.
Yeah. The Mujahideens were the Arabic word for justice fighters. When the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, the only opposing forces were that loosely fitted group named the Mujahideen. They fought for about 7 years. And out of that grew, with the help and aid of Brzezinski and Obama, grew a group called the Taliban. And now, you'll note that Osama bin Laden, who was forced out of Saudi Arabia and forced out of Somalia, out of Sudan, had to retreat back to Afghanistan, and formed a group called the Al-Qaeda, which is not the Mujahideen nor the Taliban. And there was rivalry even during the war between the Afghans and Mujahideens and later the Taliban and the Soviet invasion and Soviet armed forces and Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a group run solely by Osama bin Laden, but Osama bin Laden is neither of Pakistan nor Afghan. He's a Saudi Arabian. But it is what we're going to demonstrate and prove at the trial is that Obama was instrumental in organizing the Taliban, which is a group called a Bible study group or a religious study group. He organized that group out of the Mujahideen. So when I hear him say he was a community organizer, I say, yeah, right. But the community was way across the world over there in Afghanistan, where you organize the Taliban. And by the way, the Taliban later became the leaders, yet later took over Afghanistan, took over the presidency, took over the military, they took over everything, and led that nation until they were later overthrown, which is what Obama has done right here in America through a structure of organizing. He's taken over America. It just takes a little detail work and watching what they have done, what he has said, and you can see the trail is very clear.
Again, this is fascinating, and don't want to ask you to disclose things that you want to say for the trial, but from a broader perspective, I keep wondering, I know Obama's a tool, and I'm wondering, you know, the number of potential people he could be a tool for. Obviously, Brzezinski, there's a larger plan here because the saber rattling on the Arab community and Obama's professed Muslim background and so forth. And, you know, there are connections there to Bilderbergers and so forth and so on. It seems to me that whoever put him up as a front may have made a mistake, and that there could be really unbelievably wicked forces unleashed by this ungodly event.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I have said that that is indeed the case. That there is a window, there's an area of Obama's life, and some people said I'm obsessed with him. I'm not. I am not. And I try to explain that I'm a pastor. I believe this man is the son of Satan. I believe that. And as a pastor and a man of God, I ought to be preaching against him with all the tenacity I possibly can. I should be crying aloud and sparing not and letting people know that there's an evil in the world like they've never seen before. But having said that, the period between his Afghanistan-Pakistan excursion, if you will, he comes back from that region and he goes to Chicago and he becomes a community organizer and he works there for a while. He stays in Chicago as a community organizer for 3 years, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, he gets accepted to Harvard. It's a mismatch. Now, a number of students, you know, they take a hiatus from college after the bachelor's degree, and then they go for the master's or a professional degree. But for the most part, the Columbia Ivy League types, they continue right through until they've received the highest professional degree, and then they start their careers. They don't take a hiatus. Now, that's not to say that everybody does that. Some do. But for Obama, first of all, to have been a C student at Occidental, and then he matriculates to Columbia, then he stays out for 5 years, and then goes to Harvard, and he gets accepted at Harvard, which is another very tough school to get into. There's a question here about whether or not, and then he becomes the president of the Harvard Law Review. There's a question of whether or not he becomes this maniacal person and he's uncontrollable, and that a evil has been unleashed by Brzezinski. And I'm not saying which way it is, but it certainly is a question, and you've raised it. And he was forced to get allowed into Harvard. Listen, Obama, Hillary Clinton, the Clinton political machine, is perhaps one of the most powerful political machines in modern history. They discovered that Obama had lied on his application to the Illinois State Bar. There was a question raised about whether or not you have been known or used any other name at any other time other than the name upon which you're applying for a license to practice law. And he answered no. They discovered that. And they brought it to the attention of the Obama campaign. He quickly contacted the Illinois State Bar and retired his license, and then got people like Rod Blagojevich and those other thugs out there in Chicago to not pursue the matter. But Obama doesn't have a law license now. He can't practice law. So I think that what I'm trying to express is that there has been an evil, and even the Clintons could deal with it after that, there's been an evil unleashed on our nation that most people aren't prepared to even think about the depths of how evil and how maniacal this man is. He is a cold-blooded genocidal, if you will, set to do one thing, to destroy the greatest nation that ever was, and that will be his legacy. And that's what he wants, that he thrives off of that like a termite thrives off of destroying houses, eating up the wood.
I know, and I swear, if you could look into a termite's eyes, it would be the same expression as Obama. Whenever he's talking with about our troops or with our troops, there's a look of emptiness, godlessness, a murder, if you will. Just I hate to describe that, but it's very, very uncomfortable. The same kind of people who have that view or the weather underground people and so forth. Yes, please go ahead. Yes.
Hi. Before you go on, I need to make sure I just heard what Reverend Manning just said. Reverend Manning, did you just say that Hillary Clinton's campaign, when they looked into Barack Obama's law career, that it was during the campaign that he relinquished his license?
He surrendered his law license in 2008. It became official in 2000, before he won the nomination.
I had no idea that. That is fascinating. Okay, thank you.
And then, of course, I wonder if she or somebody else, the Clinton campaign or somebody else, found out about his forged Secret Service or Selective Service registration.
I don't know if they found out about that, because that matter has not been forced upon him the way the issue of his license to practice law.
Mm-hmm.
But they did discover that, and it was really a very easy trail to follow. If you read his book, you discover he was indeed Barry Satoro. Hillary and Bill tried to raise the issue about his not being a natural-born citizen. But that brought the response of racism against them, and it was fierce, and they backed away. A young girl tried to spit on Bill Clinton in Columbia, South Carolina, and I watched that on television. Bill Clinton's office is just two blocks from where I'm sitting at right now. He moved to Harlem, as you remember, after his presidency.
Yes.
He was loved by black people. But when they started opposing Obama, it was and Obama and his crowd used racism against those two so effectively that they could not maneuver around the racist calls. So they let a lot of things go. But they could have made a bigger issue about his ineligibility and his law license, but it was going to destroy them in the process. I think they could have survived it, but they backed away. They thought they could win the primary without it.
Reverend Manning, this is, again, just stunning, because I don't think there are too many people now who not believe Obama hates us and really is out to destroy our country. What do you suspect is behind the silence? And in that regard, how are you going to get the mainstream media, or as I like to call them, the lamestream media, to follow this trial and the information that you are uncovering?
You made mention of a follow-up on looking into a termite's eyes and you see nothing. If you remember during the campaign, people were saying how cool he was, how calm he was. He never got flustered or fluttered or that kind of thing. The reason being is not because he is so cool and calm and, you know, just got it together. He just doesn't have any emotions. He's not touched. I mean, he is diabolical. And I think people have stopped saying that about him now, that he's cool and he's calm. They said that during the campaign, but I don't hear that very much anymore. He is a person, if you look into his eyes, all you can see is blackness way down into the pit of hell. There's nothing there. He doesn't have a soul. He is an unusual character. But I wanted to address that. But to try to respond to, there are several things that the media knows what I'm saying. I'm not revealing anything at present. I do plan to bring forth witnesses and make some major statements and documents in the trial. But what I'm saying right now, listen, Bill O'Reilly knows, Rush Limbaugh knows, Hillary Clinton knows, George Bush, they all know this. I'm not saying anything. I haven't divulged anything tonight that's not within the circles of people that they don't know about Obama. They know that about him. What I suspect they're going to try to do, or at least I thought so until a week or so ago, was that they were going to try to ignore me. They were going to try to let this trial happen and just ignore me, as they've done with the Tea Party. They called me a fringe, loon, idiot, somebody who's off my rocker, and not to be paid any attention to. And they would, if they did have to pay attention to me, that would be how they would try to offset it, by labeling me as somebody that's just not anybody that you want to deal with. But I don't think I think they've thought that through and discovered that's not going to work. So they're going to have to try to cut a deal with the American people before I can get all my information out, so that people will not look to me for the information. They'll let, you know, they'll call a meeting and let Anderson Cooper or let Katie Couric gently bring in some things out and just kind of deal with them and then explain from a point of view what I suspect that's what they're going to do, but that's not going to work either. I'm anticipating that. Beyond that, they'd have to get violent with me, and I don't know if they're going to try that either.
That's true, and you know, of course, the misprision of felony is what all of them face, because it sounds to me like everybody knew. And no one's willing to take a stand right now. But when it all comes out, they all go down. And with that regard, before we get to our third subject and finish up this evening, we have a guest on the line, Jim Borland, I believe. He's got his hand up. And Mama Cooks, are you there? And if not, I will unmute Jim.
Okay, am I on?
Jim, there you are. Very good.
Good.
Please introduce yourself to Reverend Manning and let him know where you are. You've been a guest of ours before, and welcome back. Reverend Manning, this is Jim Borland.
Thank you. Reverend Manning, I'm from Columbus, Mississippi. I have my own thoughts about how Obama got elected, and I'm curious to know yours. And my other question is, how much black support are you getting? that says it all right there, I guess.
The election of Obama, and I don't mean to interrupt your question if you're still asking, was an unusual event in election history. The American people did not want this man for their president. They thought he was inexperienced. They thought he was young. His record at the Illinois State Senate was abysmal, and as a senator from the state of Illinois in the Senate was worse. They didn't know whether he was a Muslim. They just didn't want him. It had nothing to do with his race. Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and everybody had broken that barrier, torn it to smithereens. Alan Keyes had done a great job on that. It wasn't about race. It just wasn't. Obama was just very suspicious, you know. And then he had that Jeremiah Wright character running around in an animal outfit, looked like he had on a leopard skin suit or something, preaching about America. So, I mean, people were just curious about him. But the media that I refer to, that Dr. Kate calls the lamestream, I call the dunghead media in reference to the word dung, the media loved him. the media loved him because they knew he was anti-establishment. He was anti-Judeo-Christian ethics and structure. They read him from day one that this man would turn America into a free fall. They didn't like the warmongering spirit of America, the media. Plus, they wanted freedoms to express their sexualities in ways in which many administrations were oppressing in their idea. They knew that Obama was their boy, and so they lied for him. They protected him. I don't care who came out and made a charge against Obama. The media would come back the next day and cover it up, talking about how great he was. By the time the media got through with Obama, you thought he was the boy next door. I mean, he was. Nobody thought he was a Muslim. I mean, it was. That's how he got elected. In addition to the fact that John McCain just rolled over and played dead. I don't know what he was thinking about, that somehow or another he is this great bipartisan, if you will, mediator between good and evil, and there was some sort of a happy ground, all this business about absolutes in life, there don't exist, let's try to find a way to for everybody to have be happy in your evil and in your, it was ridiculous. And Obama rolled over that, too. Now, as far as the other question, probably I have any help here in the community. I'll say this. I've been in this community for 28 years, and I live here. I don't move to some other. I live in Harlem. I operate three schools for children in this community. And I've been a faithful pastor, and the people know that I have loved them. And I've told them the truth. They don't always like it. Now, with respect to Obama, they would that I would support him and would join their bandwagon, and I'd stop telling the truth on them because I tell the truth on them every day, and they know it. They don't support me, but they're not wickedly opposed to me. I see it in their eyes when I see them. They have a respect for the truth, I tell them, but they have not come and say, we're with you on Obama. We're going to help you get rid of him. They're not going to do that, not in 1,000 years.
In my neck of the woods, I see pretty much blind allegiance toward Obama among the black community.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
The other point that I wanted to offer regarding him being elected, I see that he is a product of the judgments that are on this land, that there is a cursing on this land that would have ever allowed him to be elected. You talk about the media, but there were hordes of just thousands of people that attended his rallies that had to be just blinded and just mesmerized and intoxicated with his gab. But I, in the end, I think that he is a product of the judgments that are on this land. If you think about it, we just went to war to remove a guy named Hussein, and then we turn around and we elect one as president who doesn't even have the credentials to be there. It just... How else can you explain something, a phenomena like that, other than a cursing upon the land?
I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I've been saying it for the last 2 years. Just the very fact that he has a Muslim name disturbs me greatly. I mean, I'm a Christian, and I want Christians, I want Christ, I want Jesus to win, and he will. But for America, I mean... America, to have a man who's the highest official of our land with a Muslim, I don't understand it. But as far as the judgment is concerned, Dr. Kate raised a question a few moments ago about the volcano that has erupted and just stopped travel between, it stopped Europe and America from having any, if you will, travel between each other. For as many as 4 days. That was the sixth earthquake, because a volcano is an earthquake. It's just in a different position. We had the major one in Haiti, then Chile, then Baja, then Sumatra, and someplace else, and then, of course, this one with the volcano. I see it as the judgment of God, but I see that Obama's not been sent by God, but like that volcano has released, I see that hell has released Obama. And I see him as a full product. I have preached over the last 2 years that he's unredeemable. That is to say that as Satan is unredeemable, no point in preaching to Satan. He's not going to be saved. He's unredeemable. And so is Obama. That's how evil I think he is.
Well, he's professed to be Christian, but there's nothing really that supports it, it doesn't seem like.
Well, I think that if were he a Christian, there would be a lot of signs. We kind of know each other by our fruit. He's not a Christian. And Jeremiah Wright is not one either, by the way, who was allegedly his pastor for 20 years. We are at present on the threshold of losing this great nation. And we have the opportunity. It is not completely gone. I think by and large the American people just have to become aware of the fact that it's going to cost us a bit of a revolution-type pain to restore this nation. We've got a cancer that must be operated on. We must go through the procedure. We must, and then once the cancer is removed, we need to remove it completely. We need to look at the media, the courts, and all of the people that have suborned Obama's illegal presidency. It must be addressed. We can't just take out Obama. We've got to look at all of what has taken place, and then we've got to seek recovery and seek some, you know, recuperation, and we can be healed. We have a platform upon which we can be healed, but we're going to have to turn back to God. I've asked people to, in this process, and we'll continue. We've lost something great in our nation, and the generation that we're raising don't even know it. We've got to be better parents to our unborn children. We've allowed, especially in this community, we allow too many abortions. We allow that to be the answer. Whether you want to believe that life starts at conception or 9 months or first trimester, whatever, we allow too many abortions. We just do. It needs to stop. If that's where life, if that's where children, that's where I came from, then we got to be better parents to the child that's unborn, and then we got to be better parents to the child that is born. We then send our 5- and 6-year-old children into these dens of iniquity called public schools or other public places or before televisions where the worst of debauchery, I don't know if I could have ingested the kind of stuff that 5- and 6-year-old are subject to when I was of that age. I don't know what I would have thought. I was shy at 21 about certain things. We got to return to being better parents to our unborn children, to our born children, and the generation that you saw chasing after Obama is a generation that does not know God and want to, and they have become a part of the process of overthrowing the tenets that have made this nation great.
Yes,
very, very disturbing.
Very, and I wanted to say, Jim, great questions, and we have another caller on. But the sort of things about the youth not knowing God and not knowing the Constitution and the role that divine providence played. Yes, Helen, and also we have...
I'm sorry, I keep muting my phone and thinking I'm talking to air, when in fact I'm not. And so thank you very much for acknowledging that. If I could elaborate a little bit on what Reverend Manning just said.
Okay. Just 1 second. I just want to let you know we have about 20 minutes left, and I do have another caller in. But, yes, please go ahead.
That's fine. I will take
thank
less
you.
Than 60 seconds.
Take
and
more
that
PD.
Is, yes, that is one of the privileges of running a blog is your bloggers share all kinds of information with you. and it's fabulous. And I happen to be one of those kind of blog hosts that I go to every single link my bloggers share with me, because they're an extremely informed group of bloggers, so therefore I've got to keep up with them. But one of them a couple of months ago turned me on to a documentary called MAFA 21, and it's M as in Mary, A-A, F as in Frank, A, 21. And I've always been pro-choice, Dr. Manning, and forgive me for that. But I've always been pro-choice because I've always come from the Democratic plant. Until I saw that movie and I understood what the real background was behind pro-choice, behind eugenics, behind all of that, I have such apologies to make for the rest of my life. And because I was one of those that was sucked into the propaganda of pro-choice. And MAFA 21 unveils, or should I say, it takes everybody's blindfold off their eyes. Whether you're pro-choice or anti-choice, it does not matter. It will absolutely strip all of the party rhetoric away, and you can see exactly what that amendment meant and why it is in our history and why it is law. And the moment I got it, I got it. And so I would encourage anybody and everybody to watch MAFA 21. I used to have it on my website. I'll put it back on if folks want to watch it. It's about an hour and a half documentary. It is so worth your time.
Please
so
do.
I would encourage everybody to watch it. Thank you. That's all I've got to say.
Helen, thank you so much for raising that issue, and please do put it on your website. You know, I'd love to see it. But also, and you know, with respect to what we've just been talking about, it is not a choice. It's called abortion. It's called death.
Oh my God!
And yes,
you,
and this is
but
this is
Kate.
This is
okay.
Part of yes. This is part of the sort of liberal, if you will, stealing the language to attach a different term to something that is really something else. So it's
oh,
the same
okay.
with progressive choice.
MAFA 21, and I don't mean to cut you off, and forgive me for that. MAFA 21 absolutely goes so much deeper than what
you
just shared with you.
Thank
with
you.
Who,
I'm looking forward to that.
And the beauty of MAFA 21 is it's two black individuals, a young man and a young woman, telling the story about eugenics and how when the slaves were freed in the United States back in the 1800s, during the time that the Act of 1871 was passed, how the slaves, the 4 million slaves, do we send them back to their country? Do we keep them here? What do we do with these 4 million slaves? And that is when the whole eugenics movement began. And that is exactly when, not fast forward to World War II and Hitler, we were alive and well as Americans. During from 1860 until about 1940-45, we had a very vibrant eugenics movement in the United States of America, but it was always based on genocide for the black slave. And once you watch MAFA 21, you will never again support Roe v. Wade. Never.
Well, it sounds like we
because
will.
Because it's diabolical,
right.
It's
right.
Evil, and it's everything people have been saying for years and years and years. And I was just too ignorant to listen, but I'm listening now.
Thank you. Thank you, Helen. And Reverend Manning, we have Dale Cooks from the Tea Parties on the line to ask a question. Dale, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Kate. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thank you for joining us.
Dale Robertson. So, hey, Reverend Manning.
Oh, sorry.
It's a pleasure.
Dale, how are you doing tonight?
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've talked to your wife before, and I'm trying to get you guys involved with the tea parties because I know the mission that you're on is a large mission, and my whole reason for starting the tea party was I was well aware of the left using the R card to push their agenda, and which really you're having the seeds of division. And so I'll just read you a little bit about our mission statement so you'll know where I come from. The Tea Party is a Christian political organization that bridges the gap of all parties, in particular the Democratic and Republican parties. And we'll welcome all peoples and ideological perspectives with intent to streamline government and to adhere to our constitutional rights addressed in the U.S. Constitution and by God above. That was my intent from the beginning. Because I was being attacked from different perspectives and realizing that me individually as a Christian was trying to do the right things to restore our country through a business model, but I was approaching it wrong. Our government was corrupt, and we had to change our government. And so I think you're doing a great job. I think that you've identified the seeds of discourse or the seeds of division, which is hatred, and when you've got the seats of power, our government, both the left and the right, are dividing us, that, I'd like to encourage you to get in contact. I'd like to get in contact with you after the program sometime because we do have a radio program with the Tea Party throughout the country to get you on the air, to get the message out to people so that we can support what you're doing because many of these other groups who are funded by political parties, all they're going to do is be divisive, and I don't believe in division. I believe in unity. I believe Americans need to stand together regardless of race, creed, or color. I may not agree with a Muslim, but you have the right to express yourself. I just disagree with your faith. I'm a Christian. And so I think that you're doing a great job, brother.
You can contact our office. I don't know if you have the number, but certainly our website is atlah.org, atlah.org. Again, that's atlah.org. And Dr. Kate has got our contact information as well. And I'd love to be able to have you contact us, or I contact you. If I get a number, I'll give you a call. I'd love to be able to talk with you. We need as much help as we can in this process. And it appears that the left has decided that they're going to label the Tea Party as a racist group to marginalize and then disband the view. I guess you see that coming. They're working very feverishly at that process. But I certainly would like to talk with you, to dialogue with you, to see if somehow or another we can be cooperative in process of loving this nation and saving this great heritage. So.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I'll definitely be contacting you guys tomorrow, and hopefully we can work together to restore our country. And I feel everything I've heard from you, I've listened to your programs a lot, I've seen a lot of your YouTube videos, and you're a man of faith, you love our country, you've identified the source of our problem, which is hate.
Yes.
And division. And, I grew up in the projects as a kid. I lived in the barrio, and it was unusual for a white kid to grow up in that environment. But what was unique or precious about that, I didn't know racism existed growing up in that multicultural racial neighborhood that I didn't think existed until I graduated high school and went into the real world, and it is there. And I don't feel guilty because other people have been racist, because I haven't been racist myself. It's just that I'm shocked that the seats of power will use division and hatred to motivate the masses to get elected. And I really applaud your efforts.
Well, I tell people all the time, I grew up in Jim Crow South, and I did not experience racism. And people don't believe me, but you are confirming that it's possible to grow up in an environment that you don't notice racism or you don't feel it. I mean, it isn't that I wasn't unaware of what it could possibly be or what it was. It just was not expressed in that way. And my father and my parents, the church that we attended, taught us to love and to respect. We grew up as Christians, is what we were, and we all were during Jim Crow North Carolina. And I didn't grow up with hatred in my heart. I didn't grow up with disdain in my heart, as I see so many hardened young men today, and politicians as well, manipulating that hate and destroying our nation and destroying people's potential. There's got to be some sort of a reckoning. It's my understanding. I've seen so many young men in this community whose lives have been shattered, whose children are on public assistance, who live under the worst kind of conditions because they have been taught to hate this nation. Therefore, they can't function. You can't go work on a man's job if you hate him. You're not going to help his business grow. So therefore, you're going to be unemployable. I see men every day in this community who haven't had a job, who haven't been downtown in the last 20 years because they're just unemployable because of the festering hatred. And it's all on television. These leaders, they fester it. They now know how to plant it and subliminal messages. It is God needs to bring these leaders, these Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharptons, they need to be brought to account for the lives that they have destroyed. And I'm working to try to overturn it. As soon as I get this Obama trial thing out of my way, I'm continuing to work on these guys as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend. Thanks for these great questions and discussion. And Dale, we have about 9 minutes left right now, 10 minutes. And Reverend Mann, we've been skirting around this issue, and it sort of is the last piece that I really wanted to ask you about. You've mentioned revelations. You know, from your regular person out there, as you know, we are bombarded every single day with a new tax taken out of our paychecks, something more announced, now the concerns for false flag events. We are well educated. We know about Cloward Piven. We know about Alinsky. We know also that those are red herrings, if you will, that there is something larger going on. Can you help us see how we can gather our strengths, what is going on in the larger way? I just know that what's going on right now is supposed to be going on. Evil has been unleashed. And part of that is to call God's children forward. Can you help us see where we are and what you think?
Well, you know, I want to respond to that question. And I want to ask everyone listening to please listen carefully so I'm not misunderstood. I certainly don't want anyone to leave this meeting misunderstanding what I'm about to say. And the other thing is that the 7 minutes or so we have left is not enough time. But let me try to hit the broad strokes of this. There is a general theme that the Bible presents consistently from its inception at Genesis right through to what we consider to be the conclusion in Revelation. And the whole idea of creation was set up to have a sense of unity and oneness. And it is the goal, it has been the goal of the Old Testament and the goal of the New Testament more emphatically, to bring the world to one kingdom, to one Lord, to one faith, and to one baptism, that we as a people should be one. The great verse in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one." Moses was perhaps most prolific in bringing the mankind and humankind after the fall of sin and the flood to understanding that we were not a polygamous or a polytheistic, rather polygamous, polytheistic God, polytheistic people, that God was not many, but he was one, and he was able to solidify that. What we also and that is the goal of it should be of every Christian. It was the mandate of Jesus to the apostles, go and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, that we may be one. Convert the world to oneness in the kingdom of God, that there should not be this division of religion and ideologies, but that we should be one people under God. And that is the mission. We need to also understand, concurrent to that, that Satan has the exact same principle in hand. Globally, when we step back from this planet and look in the midst of the universe in which we find ourselves, the purpose of this of the main powers that exist, whether they be creation pre-creation powers or creation powers, and the main purpose and what would be the ideal, just looking at the universe itself, is that the earth should be about one purpose, and that we should all be one. We should not be a divided people. And in that unity, we will find a strength and a life that we have not. What the kingdom of God, the teaching about heaven represents, is that in heaven, as we can come to understand it in whatever way in which we interpret it, is that we're going to have this bliss time, and we're all going to be about one God, one faith, and one way of life. We will all subscribe to what that is, and that, in a sense, is the essence of heaven. But Satan's got another idea. He wants a one-world order, and he goes about it. He's got his own religion. He's got his own banking system. He's got his ways of accomplishing it. There's certain structures that he has put in place so that he can bring the world, not whether people all agree on the same idea, but if he is in absolute control of every person's life on this planet, they're under one authority, then he would have accomplished it. And the Bible clearly tells us that he is going to gain great power in doing this, so much so that he will rise to such a level that if you don't become a part of his kingdom, you will not be able to participate in the economics or any other structure of his world. You're going to have to buy into it. The Bible also states that there will be a small remnant of people who will not be taken in by this. But the Bible clearly states that there's going to come a time where Satan will look like he has advanced to unite this world in such a way that all nations, all kindreds, and all tongues will be at his authority and at his power. So when we hear the Illuminati's, or we hear talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, where people like Rick Warren, who is a pastor of a church out in California, is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. The Council on Foreign Relations is pretty much the headquarters for all the groups to come into, the Bilderbergs, the Illuminati's, the Rothschilds. They all come to the table in their various heads, but the Council on Foreign Relations actually is the one place where they're United Nations for that. They have a purpose in mind, and that is to rule the planet. They want a one-world order. They've been working on this now for a century or so. They might advance beyond where we are as Christians, but they ultimately will not get the victory. I don't know if that explains, and I don't want anybody to think that somehow or another I'm doubting that God will overcome. I don't want anybody to, but you have to, if you don't think that there is a concerted effort to bring a one world, new world order in, then you're sadly mistaken. That it's going to happen, or it's happening now, I think is best I can possibly say that.
Reverend Manning, thank you so much, because it seems like the perversion of God, which was required by Satan, is this one concept that Christ, that God talked about, this one, has been perverted to the New World Order, which has its God as the state. This has just been extremely enlightening, and I thank you. And I just wanted to let you know we have Brent Avery on Revolution Radio, Walls in Our Mind, tomorrow. He's with the End Times Ministry, and I'm sure we're going to be asking him some of the same questions. And I'd like to take a moment to thank you, Reverend Manning, so much from the bottom of my heart for joining us this evening. It's been extremely enlightening. We support you 100%. And listeners out there, please go to the trial. Please join Reverend Manning, and I will do it. I thank you so much. And because of the importance of where we are right now, and because of who you are, I'd like to close this evening with a song from Casting Crown called What If His People Prayed, because it sounds like that's what we're going to have to do. We are in the midst of this, but we are God's children, and we're being called to resolve this. Obama is the focus right now. Thank you, Reverend Manning, very much.
And God bless you. Thank you for having me.
God bless you. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
What if the armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free, and not let Satan have one more. What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate? If his people prayed, and those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their wrong ways. And what would happen if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way? Then maybe kids in school could pray. Unborn children see light of day. What if the life that we pursue came from a hunger for the truth? What if the family turned to Jesus, stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his people prayed? And those who bear his name would only sing.
Love me, and I.
Oh, yeah.